No, but now about 8 days after these sayings, Jesus took with him Peter and John and James and went up on the mountain to pray. And while he was praying, the appearance of his face changed, and his clothes became dazzling white. Suddenly they saw two men, Moses and Elijah, talking to him. They appeared in glory and were speaking of his departure, which he was about to accomplish in Jerusalem. Now Peter and his companions were weighed down with sleep, but since they had stayed awake, they saw his glory and the two men who stood with him. Just as they were leaving him, Peter said to Jesus, "Master, it is good for us to be here. Let us make three dwellings, one for you, one for Moses, and one for Elijah," not knowing what he said. While he was saying this, a cloud came and overshadowed them, and they were terrified as they entered the cloud. Then from the cloud came a voice that said, "This is my son, my chosen. Listen to him." When the voice had spoken, Jesus was found alone, and they kept silent, and in those days told no one any of the things they had seen. The Gospel of the Lord. Thanks be to God. The Lord be with you. I'm a bit of a science nerd, and whenever the astronomers send up a probe or point a new telescope at some corner of our universe, I just know they're going to show us something ancient and beautiful, something that I probably couldn't have imagined. Secrets that they're showing us that have been hidden for millennia. And they're presented for us for human consumption for the first time in human history on our phone screens. Pluto has mountains and stars that have planets, planets that might even support life. Mars has water. Recently, they even found evidence that indicates that there's a ninth planet out there in our solar system on a cold and lonely and long orbit. And here's the really cool part. We haven't even seen this planet yet. We've only witnessed the evidence of its gravitation and its effect on all the other stellar bodies in the system. In the weeks after Epiphany, we follow a collection of Jesus stories where Jesus is revealed to the people around him. Stories where Jesus lets it slip that he's something special. When the disciples and the crowd sneak a peek at this person of Jesus, but then they catch a glimpse of Christ. And the concealed glory of the living God shines for just a few moments. These gospel stories often have a human touch, too. We have a story of a refugee child being visited by foreign magi. Jesus submits to the waters of baptism and joins the crowd, just like everyone else. Jesus lets it slip when he does a bit of a trick at a wedding, turning water into wine, and there it tells us that his glory is revealed. Or maybe it's that hometown boy who read the First Testament reading, his local synagogue, and the people said, "Isn't this Joseph's son?" These are snapshot moments in the life of Jesus made into miracles as the glory of Christ shines through. And on Transfiguration Sunday, we get to do something special. It's a little different. It's not really a story that's especially relatable. This isn't an earthy account about local village life. This is not a customary gathering or a regional event. The Transfiguration is entirely otherworldly and strange to us. When we celebrate the Transfiguration, we look at a Christ story with the whole curtain torn back for just a few moments. It's a unique miracle because Jesus isn't doing something in the world. This miracle is something that happens to Jesus. Jesus is being pushed into the spotlight. There's prophecy, there's a fantastic display, and there's rich significance and purpose. And so this Sunday, we swap out our regular stoles, and we get out the dazzling white ones that we keep for just special days like this. And together as a people, we're going to point the telescopes of our worship towards the mountaintop, a mountain that glows with holy radiance and significance. This is a glimpse of the glory of Christ. This is the full production. And all the traditional signs of God's presence are there. They're on a mountaintop. There's a cloud. There's a bright light. There's a voice from heaven. Jesus' face changes and it becomes a dazzling white. And just to make sure we really, really don't miss the point, there's a special visit from a couple of Sunday school superstars, Bible characters. Moses, who Brian pointed out this morning, actually finally makes it to the promised land in this story. And Elijah, the most righteous and vigorous and powerful prophet. And we don't really get to know what goes on in that conversation with those three, but Luke tells us that Jesus and Moses and Elijah were talking about the weeks to come, naming what he was about to accomplish in Jerusalem. They're considering the long and difficult road ahead and the immense weight that Jesus would carry. Maybe this was a time for assurance, advice, counsel. Your two mentors are Moses and Elijah. Maybe this is gas in the tank for Jesus as he prepares for his long road to Easter. And all of this is witnessed by three sleepyhead disciples who don't even share the story until years later. This same Jesus, the local boy from Nazareth who they've known, he appears in glory. The fullness of Christ. And they're appropriately confused, appropriately amazed. And Peter even gets interrupted mid-sentence, right when he's trying to say the right thing for once, right when he's trying to be hastily hospitable, he gets interrupted by a voice from heaven, no less. "This is my son, my chosen. Listen to him." And then, all at once, the production is over. Moses and Elijah are gone, and the light and the cloud and the prophets are gone, and their friend Jesus, Mary's son from Nazareth, is back standing there with them. And so Jesus and the disciples walk back down the mountain, back down to the dusty roads and the busy streets, and they joined the crowd of regular people living out their daily grind, paying bills, buying groceries, sick people, rude people, mean people, tired and troubled citizens, people with back problems and heart disease and flat feet. Have you ever been to a concert, or maybe you went to summer camp, maybe you took a trip somewhere that had such a profound effect on you that it just sort of hung there with you afterwards? And then when you tried to explain it to your friends, you could just tell they never really could quite get it. This Saturday, Sharon and Wally had some of the youth in their house. We got there to go on a sleigh ride. And after our sleigh ride, or during our sleigh ride, one of our grade 8 boys named Luke decided he wanted to let himself be dragged behind the sleigh. And somehow in the process got covered, and I mean covered, head to foot in slick mud. I still think he had a great time. So when the sleigh ride was over, the wind was blowing so hard, Sharon said, "I think we're going to have our wiener roast inside." And the kids all said, "What? How are we going to have a wiener roast inside?" When Luke walked into the living room and he saw a roaring fire there in the living room and he saw fresh cut weenie sticks on the hearth, he looked at no one in particular and he declared with a profound seriousness, "Really? This will be a day to remember." After that big show of the transfigured Christ, it must have been a strange feeling to walk down that mountain and find yourself surrounded by the dirt and the grime of regular, non-glowing people. After a glimpse of heaven's glory, everything else must seem so regular. Every now and then, these three disciples maybe took sideways glances at Jesus, hoping that maybe they could see a glimpse again of what they'd seen on that mountaintop. Now, maybe you're the sort of person who has a long list of profound and wondrous spiritual encounters. Maybe you know exactly what I'm talking about. But my hunch is that for most of us in this room, life doesn't typically look like a dazzling display of glory and wonder. We do our thing. We live our busy days. And even on a good day, even in a good week, it can take a whole community of gathered people to help us catch a glimpse of God's glory. The Christian life, for all of its great declarations, can be surprisingly ordinary. And faith is not about living in the glowing light of Christ. It's about our own transformation. The Christ who lives in us and gives us life. The Christian life is not the pursuit of some glorious, next shiny new world. The Christian life is about real, alive people. People made new. People who've been given fresh sight. Eyes that can see the so-called ordinary world in an entirely new light. What does it mean to see the world this way? When the Spirit of Christ coaxes us to new realities, new possibilities. I'm sure you've all had moments like this, moments you've wanted to hold on to, and you've suddenly caught a glimpse with profound clarity, maybe even. Like that morning when your son misses his bus for the third time this week, and you look over and you really want to be mad at him. And then without even a voice from heaven, you realize that this drive to school is a gift. It's a few moments maybe when a father and a son can sit in silence and prepare their hearts before the pressures of the day begin. And your heart is full of gratitude. Your soul swells. Holy moments are all around us, friends. It's like when you gather a group of excited and busy people and they're carrying furniture up flights of stairs and putting together IKEA furniture that should have maybe just been thrown out. And you can see the joy on their faces because they are filling an apartment for a stranger who they welcome to this country. Or maybe you visited someone at the hospital and you really didn't know what to say. You had no words whatsoever. But then when you reached out your hand tentatively to touch theirs, they gripped onto it. They held onto it like it was the only thing holding them in this world. So-called ordinary things, supposedly regular people, brought to new life, transformed by the whisper of the Spirit, the inbreaking of God's shining glory. It's the work of Christ in the world, and it's in you, and it's in me. This Sunday marks for us the end of Epiphany, and the revealed Christ who's been giving us hints all along. We're about to start a long walk with Jesus to Jerusalem. For us right now, the Transfiguration is our bright spot. It's our beacon. It's a sign for us before we begin this journey of Lent. It's a season of quiet and confession, season of hunger and frailty and preparation. It's a season of dark and ashes. Perhaps also it's a season where we take some time and we scrape away some of the accumulated dreck in our lives so that we can open our hearts maybe a little more to the Spirit of Christ. Christ who coaxes us into new realities, places us in locations and communities where we glimpse the rich beauty and possibility that is all around us. Friends, what has been accomplished in your universe? Do you have stories to tell? Do you have eyes to see Christ's revealing in your corner of the solar system?